on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is July 30th. We've got one more day in the month, and we'll be finished for the month. Not a very good month for the market. Not a very good year so far for the market. If you use the S&P weighted 500, equal weighted 500, you'll find that the market is definitely in a downtrend. But the market is not equally weighted. The S&P 500 is not index is not equally weighted normally. So it's showing a flat market for the year. But if you equal weight it, what that tells you is that all the stocks, the top 500 stocks, which are the big stocks, if you equal weight them, and they all have the same weight on the index, the overall market is down. And not down a little bit, not down hugely, but definitely in a corrective mode, which is kind of interesting. I thought you would be interested in that. We're live 24 hours a day. We're live 4 to 5%. 4 to 5 Pacific time, but our line, we have an open line that's always on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We call it our listener line, and you can call, and we'll play the question on the next show so you can have the answer. Now, each of our listeners is in a different place in relationship to financial well-being, that is. They have different risk tolerance, their nearness to retirement. All this is different. You may be thinking about transitioning to retirement right now. I don't know. Maybe you're just the beginning of your career. I don't know. But one of the biggest challenges that we try to help our clients and everybody else tackle is the transition from working to retirement. And the earlier you start that idea of a transition, because at some day that's going to happen, the better off you'll be. The process does not begin the year a person retires. Many, many years beforehand it starts. And the typical advice you get says that as you get closer to retirement, you should position your portfolio into a more conservative stance by moving some of the money out of assets like volatile stocks and high-yield bonds and into blue-chip stocks and high-grade bonds. And, of course, there's a lot of sense to that. While it's a correct strategy for most people, but not necessarily for everybody. A recent study challenges that view. It challenged it, and the problem is with the rule, with going more conservative. And there's a rule of thumb, I'm sure you've heard it before. You said, you know, the traditional adage is that you take 110 minus your age, and that is how much you should have in stocks. So if you're 50 years old, that should be 60% of stocks. Well, everybody is so different on risk tolerance, retirement goals, how much money they have saved up with, you know, and the problem with going to bonds, you know, with an automatic system is it totally ignores the reality of the bond market. Is this a good time to go into bonds, big time, heavily into bonds and bond funds? That's kind of tough. I grant you that the stock market is not very strong right now. It's kind of on a downward track a little bit, trading in a range if you're looking at the indexes. But, you know, long term, the returns are going to come from the stock market, not the bonds, not the bond market. Now with interest rates so low and the Fed wanting and willing and able to raise rates, it really wants to do that. We'll see if they do that, but I think they will. I'm not betting on September. Do you see the GDP numbers out this morning? GDP for the second quarter came out for the first time. Was it 2.3% growth, something like that? And what was interesting, they revised up the first quarter from 0.2% growth to 0.6% growth. But if you read the whole report, they revised the last 2 years of GDP downward because they just changed the way they calculated the GDP. Downward. Less growth in the last 2 years than you thought. I thought that was pretty striking, actually. I would think if the Fed revised, I mean, if the government revised GDP numbers, that all of a sudden they would revise them being showing higher, because that would show them in a better light. But they did. They showed it lower. Anyway, if you do want to understand how much risk tolerance you have, we have a questionnaire on our website called the Riskalyze Test. It takes 3 to 5 minutes. A few questions. You decide how much risk you want to take with these questions. And, you know, it comes out with a score. Your score, and just so you know, the S&P 500 risk score is about 80. And whatever your risk score will be, you know, falls above or below that, you know, that's where you know you are. If you're in your 30s, the score is in your 30s or 40s, you know, you should be, you should have much less exposure to the stock market. Anyways, give it a try. It's free on InvestTalk.com. Now, do you have questions for me right now? What do you want to talk about? We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Our number is 888-99-CHART. So let's take the question, first question from our 24-hour listener line.
If someone has like $10,000 and wants to invest in mutual funds, what would be the proper asset allocation at this point of time? Like how much of should go in value, how much should go in growth, small cap, large cap, that kind of thing. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, $10,000 is not a lot, so you're going to have to probably use ETFs, exchange-traded fund, to get into the various sectors of the market. And I would be very careful about entering the market all at one time. I would do a more of a dollar-cost averaging approach in, at this stage of the market. If it was me, I'd probably lean on the bigger cap value stocks right now. That's kind of where I would lean, not the small caps. Even though they've done very well. See, this is the whole trick about the market. When something has done very, very well in the last few years, it becomes overpriced, and then it will stop doing very well. But no one can tell you when. All I can tell you is where are the values. And the value seems to be better right now in the large cap stocks than in the other parts of the market. And there's really good value in emerging markets because they got beat up so badly. There's really good values elsewhere. But so I would probably put the 50% or more in big cap value stocks at this point. And then I would very slowly get into the invest the $10,000 over the next, I don't know, let's see, it's now about 3 months or so, 4 months. You know, be very careful. You know, the market, if the market corrects 10%, I'd be more aggressive getting in. Now, if you own mutual funds that are not in a tax-free account, you should know about a number of ways to make your mutual funds tax efficient. How mutual funds are taxed. That's what we're going to talk about today. It's going to be our main talking point. We didn't get to it yesterday, so I'm going to get to it today. What might get the millennials and the first-time buyers into the housing market? FHA is doing some things which may just bump them in the market. I saw a piece this morning about oil, and the article is all about why buying oil stocks at the current prices might be a very bad idea. Now, you know me, I've been saying that I kind of like big oil. I do. So this article kind of contradicts that idea of liking big oil. So I think I need to go over. They have 6 reasons why it might not be a good idea to buy oil stocks. I want to share that with you. And also I want to talk about the market narrowing. The stock market has narrowed. What does that mean? We're going to discuss what a narrow stock market is. Those are things we're going to talk about. Anything else you want to talk about, I'll be happy to do. Now, what happened today? The Dow was down 5 points. The NASDAQ was up 17, and the S&P was flat, zero. Not up or down, flat. Can't get flatter than that. So that's what happened to the market today. You know, for the week, if you look at it, it's really an interesting phenomenon as we go through this year. Market is just chattering in a range, up and down, just chattering in a range, you know. And I'm going to talk later on about the narrowing of the market, and that doesn't necessarily reflect chattering of a range, but it does reflect why the market's doing what it's doing, why it's chattering, because of the narrowness of it. kind of interesting stuff. At least I think it is. When you're an InvestTalk Insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by myself and Justin. Important topics, annuities, wills, trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, updated ETF lists, and a lot more. You can sign up now on InvestTalk.com. Check in now with your questions about any money matter at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, Chris from Mobile. Listen to you guys on the podcast. Looking to take an overweight position in Chevron BBX, and kind of want to ask you the golden question. Over the past 2 days, oil has gone up, and wanted to see if this is the entry point everyone's been looking for to get involved with an integrated oil company. Chevron is my choice personally, and I've been looking to take a position and just kind of bide my time. I could either obviously dollar cost average or have an overweight position. So I just wanted to get your take on this. Appreciate all you all do.
Okay, big oil, which I'm going to talk about more in depth in the show. It's going to be one of our talking points. Big oil, CVX, Chevron Corporation. And when you talk about big oil here in the United States, you're talking about ExxonMobil or CVX, Chevron. Those are the two big guys. Chevron's a $174 billion company. They're going to make $4.09 this year. That's 60% less than last year. Okay, so it was $10 last year, and they're going to make $4 this year. Next year, they're going to bounce to go back to $5.91. I like Chevron. I like the company management. I think they are really good. Pays a 4.6% dividend. It bounced up the last 3 days because oil bounced. And the question, is this a dead cat bounce? Do you ever heard that term before, a dead cat bounce? I know it sounds kind of gross, but dead cat bounce means it's really not going to go any higher. It's going to just bouncing because it got oversold. And that is true. So I might wait a few days. I want to talk about oil in depth later on in the show and oil companies and why it might be too early. I took a position in a big oil company in the last week or so. So don't think I'm not liking it, but I think you need to be cautious. I don't think you jump in. I don't think you put it overweight yet. But I do like Chevron. That dividend's not going to go away, and it goes up every year. They increase it every year. They have $19 cash flow, so huge cash flow. It's a $93 stock, and so at $5.91, that means it's what, a 20 PE or so. So it's not cheap per se. It's not cheap. Don't think in those terms. But it has lots and lots of value. Over a long period of time, it's going to be higher than it is now. I can guarantee you that. Okay, that's just obvious. But how much higher and how long will it take? And is it cheap enough? That's really the question. If you're going to take, if you really can't wait, I would be cautious, maybe half a position at this point in that stock. Okay? Just what I think we should do. Be careful is what I think. Taxing mutual funds and tax consequences. And there's two kinds of funds, of course, stock funds based in two major categories, stock mutual funds and bond mutual funds. And each one has to be talked about differently because of the different tax treatment of these things. So I'm going to get into that a little bit more in depth as the show goes along. I want to talk about it. I'm not going to try to get too much into it. There's an article on our website. You can take a look at it and read it. But you got to kind of understand how mutual funds are taxed, how you have to pay, especially at the end of the year when they usually do a capital gains distribution. You have to understand what that means. What's your question today? Is gold always a good buy? Is it good buy now? It's been really sold down. How do I get back into the market after being out for so long? So some of the questions you might have, chime in now at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Despite the rising popularity of mutual funds, many of the industry's top advisors still invest more client assets through individual securities. Individual stocks versus prepackaged funds. That's our talking point for Friday's podcast.
888-992-4278. So we're talking about tax treatment for stock mutual funds and bond mutual funds. Now, stock mutual funds are short-term capital gains tax, a long-term capital gains tax. Long-term is taxed at much less than short-term. Short-term is at your ordinary income rate, so you can't say much less, but you know, because your income rate might be low. But generally, long-term means a year, you hold the position a year or more. Short-term is a year or less. So, you know, you want that long-term rate is what you're looking for, 15%. 20% for the, you know, so just be, you know, just kind of know the difference. And bond funds are a little different because if you have a, you know, if you have a municipal bond fund and you live in the state that the municipal bond fund is in other words, it's California bond, municipal bond fund, then you're double tax free. You don't have to pay taxes on any of that. Where should you put it? Should you put it in the taxable in the IRA and the non-taxable in the non-IRA accounts? Where should, see, all those kind of questions. You need to read this article. That'll help you, guide you through that issue. Because there's kind of important issues to think about. Okay? 888-99-CHART. By the way, that article's on the website, investtalk.com. You'll see it, the article. And if you don't see it, just let me know. Send me an email. I'll find it for you. Of course, our first priority is always answering questions. Let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. My name is Jake. I'm a podcast listener from Chicago. I was wondering what you guys think of Consolidated Water Company. That's CWCO. Thanks a lot for the show, guys. I'm a big fan, and take care.
Consolidated Water Company, CWCO, it is a very tiny company. So this is always... It's always a problem where they're this small. It's a $176 million company. That's a micro cap. Why is it a problem? Because they either can grow very, very fast or they can go out of business. Or if they don't grow very fast, it's tough for them to stay in business. It's tough, okay? So they're not growing that fast. The earnings are growing pretty good. Going to be up 21% this year and 10% next year. But the sales have been pretty darn erratic. $14.7 million in the most recent quarter, and that was down 10% from a year ago. The quarter before that was flat from a year ago. The quarter before that was up 10% from a year ago. So it's kind of erratic. Engaged in the development and operation of seawater desalination plants and water distribution systems. They're out of the Cayman Islands, by the way. And we certainly could use that here in Southern California, because we've been in a long-term drought. We could use some, and actually there's I know they're building in Carlsbad a desalination plant right on the ocean there, so I know we're doing it. They what's good about the company is they consistently make money. They've been doing it for year after year after year, for all the way back to the information I have. They're going to make 64 cents this year, and as I said, 58 cents this year, 64 cents next year. It is $11.98 stock. It's coming off its 52-week high. I think you let it relax. Let it come down to wherever it's going to come down. Pays a 2.5% dividend, which I'm confused about, because you would think a small cap company like this would want to reinvest in R&D, you know, to instead of paying out a dividend. So I'm not sure why that is. I would be very careful because it's so small. It could easily skyrocket on you, or it could go bankrupt. It's easily do that. They don't have any debt, so you know, it looks like they're run pretty good. Okay, it does, but I'd be very, very careful because it's so small. So don't use much of your money to invest in it. Okay. Let's talk about oil again. On an earlier call, just the show, want to talk about should you buy Chevron. Well, I've been kind of, I think this is a good time to start thinking about getting into big oil because the price has come down on oil and the stocks have been crushed, but they're still not cheap. That's one of the things I got to point out. They're not expensive either, but they're still not cheap. But this article points out six reasons why it may be too early to think about getting back in oil. The first reason is a U.S. major oil producer. We are now a big major oil producer because of the shale oil. And so that we are now a significant producer, world producer. And, of course, that's one of the reasons why Saudi Arabia didn't slow down. Now, I'll point out today's report on oil production showed a significant slowdown here in the U.S. for the first time. So we are still a significant oil producer, but, you know, our shale oil production has slowed down. Oil is abundant worldwide, and which it is. You know, OPEC has refused to curtail production, even though this week Saudi Arabia announced that they're going to slow production after the summer. But there's a lot of oil. We don't need it. We don't need all this oil. Iran has oil to sell. You know, they just had that deal the Obama administration negotiated with the Iranians. And eventually that's going to put a lot more oil on the market. Demand is flat. Well, oil demand has fallen, actually, but only the growth of demand is falling. It's still growing. Demand is still growing, but the growth of demand is slowing. The dollar is strong as a headwind for oil. True. And big oil is pretty much battered. They've been beat up a lot, and, you know, it might take a while for them to recover. That's what they say. Now, I kind of like that the article's printed out on not bio, big oil, not the bio. I look for the contrarian point of view. Well, maybe if everybody else thinks it's not time to buy it, then everybody's out and start to go up. Coming up on Invest Talk Personal, good reasons why credit is better than debit. We talked about it. That's part two. We're going to do part two today. Give us a call. This is Invest Talk. My number is 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're here for you. Beginner or experienced investor questions are always welcome. Same number all the time. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, so we're live right now. And you can leave a question like Mike did in Reseda.
Well, my question is it still possible to buy stocks directly from companies? I understand that you can, if you know who to talk to and who to contact direct, you can buy stocks from companies and make, instead of 3%, you can make 18% and 20% on the stock, I think.
Okay, the answer to the first part is yes, you can buy stock directly from the companies. Usually it's the bigger companies. You go to the investor relations department there, and you can buy them direct. ESOPs are very, very popular, and you could do it. You indicated that you can make, instead of 3%, 18%. That's not true. I don't know where you're getting that. It's not true. Buying directly from the company only does one thing. You're still going to have to pay what the going price is. It gets rid of the middleman, gets rid of the broker and the broker dealer, that kind of thing. So that you can buy direct. Now, I'll give you a little warning, too. When you do this kind of buy, make sure it's going to be long-term, because when you have to sell the stock, you have to go find a broker, open an account, put the stock in the broker's name, and then sell it. Many companies will not buy it directly. Some will. Some of the bigger companies, they will buy it back from you. So you got to be, just to understand how the methodology of getting out as well as getting in, okay, with the stocks that you have. But you usually do that when you're thinking of buying something for a very long term, 10 years, you're going to just hold on to it because, that's a big company or some company that you just know you want to hold on to for a long, long time. Let's go to Jack in San Mateo. How you doing, Jack?
Hello.
Thanks for
calling. I've been looking at Caterpillar stock. The dividend yield is pretty high right now because the stock price seems to be toward the bottom of their 52-week range. Mm-hmm. Just wonder if you'd look at it and tell me what the chances are that they'll be able to maintain this dividend.
Okay, thanks for the call. The chances of them being able to maintain the dividend is 100%. Okay? 99.9. Nothing's 100%. Because their cash flow, this is Caterpillar, everybody, CAT, manufacturers, construction and mining equipment, diesel and natural gas engines, turbines and locomotives. And so, they've taken a hit. They made $6.21 in 2014 per share. They're going to make $4.94 this year and $4.56 next year. So earnings have come down. Sales have come down. So stock has taken a hit. Long term, though, they have such strong cash flow. I cannot see them not paying their dividend, which is 3.9%. Okay, they're going to pay it. They're going to pay it. And the stock is fairly cheap, $78, well, it's not that cheap. $78 stock, and they're going to make $4.56 next year. So you're talking about, 19 PE? So it's not that cheap. Of course, if they turn that around and start to grow again, and the mining industry starts to grow again, this is a stock you want to be in. Caterpillar. good solid company. Okay, Jack, appreciate the call. Thank you. A Caterpillar, C-A-T, everybody. It's time for our Invest Talk Personal about the day-to-day choices we make about our money. Why using your credit card is better than using your debit card. And I gave you three reasons yesterday, if you remember, why it was better. One was limited liability if someone steals your credit card and tries to use it versus your debit card. $50 for your credit card, $500 is what you're responsible for a debit card. Impact on your credit rating, because the credit card will give you a better, if you use it, it gets better credit rating. And of course, price protection. Some of the credit cards you have protections against, you buy some with it and it's a lower price somewhere else within a certain period of time, that'll give you the difference. Also, here's some more. How about travel rewards? Credit cards often offer juicy travel benefits, airline frequent flyer miles, free hotels, that kind of stuff. Then there are charge disputes. If you use a debit card, that money comes directly out. So if you use a debit card, you lost the money. A credit card, if you see something on your credit card, you say, wait a minute, I didn't buy that. You can dispute it, not have to pay it. Can't do that with a debit card. And then there's a free insurance part. Many credit cards offer no-cost insurance coverage for rental cars. Now, some of them have warranty protections. Some of them warranty extensions. Yeah, so there are more reasons than this, by the way, and you can go take a look at the AARP article on InvestTalk.com. But that's InvestTalk Personal. Is there a topic you want me to talk about? Get in touch. We're here right now at 888-99-CHART, or you can write me a note, click on Contact Steve, or contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
There's a link to today's talking point. Just look for the Thursday, July 30th heading on investtalk.com. And now it's time to ask the money question that you've been saving up today. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number on InvestTalk.
Hey, guys. Wanted to get your thoughts on the athletic apparel industry, specifically Skechers. Just want to see if it's kind of too late to the party type situation. They've been red hot lately, and not just Skechers, but Nike and Under Armour as well. And wanted to see if it's too late to get involved. I don't have any positions in the athletic apparel industry. I want to get your opinion. Thanks.
Skechers. SKX is a simple. Markets men, women's, children's, casual dress, and athletic footwear via department specialty stores. It's a $7.7 billion company, so it's pretty big. They made $2.84 in 2014. This year, they're going to make $4.29, 50% increase. Next year, another 30% increase to $5.54. Sales are growing 30% plus, over 30% a quarter. So the stock has skyrocketed. I mean, back in the beginning of the year, the stock was around $60 a share. Today, it's $148. This goes to my narrowing stock market. This is one of the industries, consumer discretionary, one of the industries that's done very, very well this year, up 10% that sector. There's only one other sector has done anything. Those are the two sectors. So consumer discretionary is one of them. I think you're a bit late. I think you need to wait. I mean, it's going to make $5.54. It's a $148 stock. And yes, its growth is very nice. But any hiccup in that, boy, this thing is going to take a dive. So I think you're too late. You want to wait for that pullback. You may not get it. May not happen this year, but there will be a pullback. There'll be a pullback somewhere. And it is a very good company to own. It's a good size company. They don't pay any dividends, so you're buying it for the growth. So you're going to have to pay up for it. But, it was up $20 today. $20 to $148, $149. So, obviously earnings came out, blew them out, and there you go. Don't chase performance. That's always a recipe for disaster. Yeah, sometimes it works out great, but I just don't suggest it. SKX was the symbol. Okay, I talked about narrowing the stocks, and I said that Skechers is in one of the sectors that done very well. Two sectors. Healthcare for the so far this year. Talking about narrowing stock market so far this year, healthcare is up 11% and consumer discretion 10%. And Skechers is in it, Nike, consumer discretionary stocks. done very, very well. Most all other sectors are down, and there's 10 main sectors. Almost all of them are down. Utilities, significantly. Transports were down 10% up until about 3 years ago, and then they started to recover. And that's a real big issue. Transports and the Dow theory. We talked about that a few days ago. The Dow theory with transports and the Dow. Transports and the Dow, the idea is the Dow, big industrial companies, Dow industrial companies, they make the stuff, and the transport section of the Dow delivers the stuff that they make. So if those stocks start, the transport start to go down, then the idea is that investors seeing deliveries slowing down. Therefore, the stock market might be headed for trouble. Because the Dow 30 is making stuff, those industrials, they're going to start making less stuff in the future. That's the thinking. You can also use that same thinking about retail sales. If retail sales, because we are consumer driven, retail sales start to fall, then you should take a look at the consumer discretionary sector. Well, that's doing very well. That's not falling. This is a confusing time, everybody, just so you know. This is a confusing time for the market. So most sectors are down. Transports were down significantly. And as I said at the top of the show, if you're looking at the S&P 500, you'll see this trade sideways. But if you look at an equal-weighted S&P 500 index, in other words, where all the stocks are equally weighted, because there's certain stocks that dominate that, and they are Apple, Exxon, Microsoft, IBM. They dominate the S&P 500 because they're so big. But if you equal weight all 500 stocks, definitely downtrend for the year. Not significant. I'm not talking about, this is just clear correction in the process. What you're seeing is the correction in sector rotation. And since this two sectors leading the 10, two sectors being up this big and another sector's not, this means the market is very narrow. Very narrow. And that is not a good thing for the market. You want a broad-based rally in the market. That's what you're looking for. And we're seeing a very narrow market, which is trading sideways. So that doesn't mean it won't rise. Matter of fact, I think by the end of the year, the market will be higher. But I'm thinking we are way overdue for a correction, and it feels like we're in one now. Depends on what sectors you're in, doesn't it? Let's go to Saeed in Oakland. Let's talk about Facebook. How are you, Saeed?
How are you? Thank you very much. Facebook, beat estimate, earning a couple of days ago. And yes. Then beat every single estimate in every single, sector. And also the stock went down. I was wondering why, but even they have an upgrade today for buyer to 116 target price. Still going down. So I was wondering, what is the system? What's going on?
Okay, good question. Facebook, everybody knows about, provides social networking platform. We all know about that. They had earnings that were very good, and the stock has been going down, but not tremendously down, but going down ever since. So that's pretty common, Saeed, where if you'll notice a few days before the earnings came out, the stock was getting stronger and stronger. So the rumor was the earnings were going to be good. And then when they came out and were good, this is the buy the rumor, sell the fact. So there's weakness in the stock from the fact that everybody's taking profits because of the rumor was they're going to do so well, or a lot of people taking profits. Now, from an investment point of view, instead of a trading point of view, the sales are doing very well, earnings are doing very well, so you can't argue with. You want to buy the stock. And today was a high volume reversal day, meaning the stock was down $1.78 to $95.21, but it was down to $92 and then reversed and closed near the high of the day on high volume. That's kind of bullish, Saeed. It tells you that people, if this goes down, they want to be owners and buyers of Facebook. So I wouldn't be too worried about it at this stage. If the whole market corrects, then this will go down with it. But the stock itself is doing pretty well. Thanks, Saeed. I appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I wanted to get into the millennials. I wanted to talk about what might bring the millennials and first-time buyers into the housing market. Something is going on because the interest rates are raising, you know, mortgage rates have gone up a little bit. I think they're like 4% or so. They were 3.5% a year or two ago. So, you know, they've been creeping up a little bit. But FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, has a program that they're reducing the mortgage insurance by an average of $900 per year. Now, FHA guarantees loans. Now, who makes the loans? Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, they make the loans. And they are making loans 97% to value. Therefore, you have to buy mortgage insurance because you have to avoid mortgage insurance, you've got to have 20% down or 20% equity in the property. And mortgage insurance can be quite expensive. So FHA started to do this several months ago. And what we've seen in the second quarter, FHA represented 23% of all financed purchased homes. That's up from the first quarter of 19%, 4% increase. Lower down payment and a lower monthly payment is it could well easily attract millennials and first-time buyers. At the same time, mortgage rates are starting to creep up. Now, you have to be careful because this is the same formula that caused the financial crisis. I'm not saying we're at that level. We're not making loans to everybody. The banks are pretty darn strict. The banking authorities are watching the banks very closely that they don't make high-risk loans and on and on and on. But, you know, what happens is this stuff happens with the best intentions all the time. The intention is to get people into homes that they want to be get into, to try to get in it. Everybody should have a house. Everybody should have their own house. Good intention, but bad result when they can't afford it. And that's what happens when you don't have any down payments and you don't, you know, very little down payment and you don't have very much monthly payment. Any little problem and all of a sudden you have lots of defaults and lots of foreclosures. And that's what happened. Caused financial ripples through everything. That was bad. We still have a few minutes left. I'll do my best to answer your question, your money question at least. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. And you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Did you know Steve has a book? It's titled Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. And this book is all about enabling the average investor to realize better than average results. Whether you manage your own money or work with a professional, look for recommended books on investtalk.com.
Okay, let's get back to work answering some questions. Get your question to me anytime you want. You can call our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. We'll answer the question on the next program.
Hi, this is Linda from Vista. I would like to ask regarding alternative minimum tax. How does it work? If you could explain it to me, I'll appreciate it. Thank you so much.
ATM, alternative minimum tax, AMT, I'm sorry, AMT, alternative minimum tax. I'm not an accountant. You need to talk to an accountant about that, but I can tell you that I've been dealing with it myself for some time. There's two ways they can compute taxes these days. One is the regular way everybody does. You know, you just fill out your taxes, you pay your amount, boom, you're done. Okay, that's normal. But if you make a lot of money and you have a lot of write-offs, the IRS and the government don't like that. So what they do is you have to then compute a different method of paying taxes. And it's their method of making sure they get rid of your write-offs or some of your write-offs if you make too much money and you don't pay enough taxes, so that the rich people, the people making high incomes, will be forced to pay more in taxes and they lose their write-offs at a certain level. And that's, you know, in general what it does. Okay, so for instance, you might have a high mortgage payment, you have high income, and you have a high mortgage payment, and you might have high medical costs, and you might have, you have business expenses that you're writing off, well, that may, on your personal income tax, you may not get to write all that stuff off because you got to pay taxes. They're going to make you pay using the alternative minimum tax method of computing your taxes. Okay, that's what that is. So it's two separate ways to figure out income tax. But it usually doesn't affect very many people. The problem is this law is very, very old. Okay, I mean, we're talking, 10, 20 years ago that they made this. But they didn't index to inflation. So the barriers to get into the alternative mini tax is coming down because inflation is eating into it, even though we have very little inflation now. Over the long term, we have, it's 3%. So at this rate, unless they make some changes, someday down 20, 30, 40 years down the road, everybody will be using alternative minimum tax because you will reach the thresholds. So they got to make the change. Our government's not too smart. They should have had that in when they put it in. Should have indexed it to inflation so it'd be the same. That's just the way things are. I wanted to talk about something, the AAII Sentiment Survey. Okay, the American Association of Individual Investors. It's a large organization, and they do a weekly sentiment survey of their members. And it's based on how much percent of their members are bullish, how many are neutral, and how many are bearish. Okay? And just to give you a kind of a long-term average, the average bullishness of this survey is about 38-39%. Neutral is about 30-31%, and bearish is about 30%. So 38-39 on the bulls, 30-30-30 issue. High 30s for bullish, low 30s for bearish. What is it now? Bullish, 21%. Neutral, 38%. Bearish, 40%. So it's about 60% below on the average bullishness. So why am I bringing this up? This survey can be used as a contrarian point of view. In other words, if all these American Association of Individual Investors are bearish, that means they're not in the market. A lot of them have their money on the sidelines. A lot of them are already out of the market because they're bearish. The more bearish they get, the less bullish they are, the more money's sitting on the sidelines. Eventually, remember, they're a member of the American Association of Individual Investors. They are investors. Eventually, that money's going to come back into the market. When will that come back into the market? No one knows. So this number, of course, changes every week. What is really interesting is the bullish figure dropped 11% in 1 week, so from 31 to 21. Bearish went up 15%. 15% in 1 week. Everybody got very bearish, got really bullish out last week. Interesting, huh? We're out of time for today. A quick reminder about my next date for portfolio reviews. I'll be at our satellite office in San Jose August 4th. Save your spot for this free checkup if you want. Go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial. Thank you for listening today. I hope you have a good evening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.